When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop. Wait. This is a special Miami Nice Light the Fuse meetup. So we're not doing the main theme today. I got something equally special. I secretly love this song, by the way. Yes! Miami Nice! Light the Fuse! Limp Bizkit! Holy shit! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Light the Fuse 200 Victory Lap! With special guests, Drew Taylor.
Exceptional.
Charles Hood.
Exceptional.
And my
exceptional
co-host, Katie Walsh. Gentlemen, welcome to Miami.
Wow.
Nice. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Wow.
We're so proud of you. Oh my goodness.
Quite an introduction.
How are you? Welcome to the show.
We have morphed into the Z100 morning. And you know what?
Is
I love
Elvis Duran on here?
Yeah. I love it. I love it. We've got a soundboard.
We built a soundboard special for you. We're so happy to see you folks. If you don't know what Light the Fuse is, it is the, well, it's the best Mission Impossible podcast on the internet. It has been going since 2018. It is a weekly show where Drew and Charles, who are our guests today, go through and deep dive on all the movies, the potential movies, talk to the guests, talk to the directors of the different films, even De Palma, for God's sake, Brad Bird. We got Bird yet? You've had Bird a couple of times, no?
Just once.
We had him for, we had a long interview with him in the fall of 2018.
It's very long, yeah. It's almost like his commentary for Ghost Protocol, which he never did a commentary. So it's kind of the next best thing.
They've had McHugh on there a million times, but most recently, I was extremely, extremely lucky because we can safely say this. I had sort of this fairy tale moment with Michael Mann coming on One Heat Minute. And then I saw a cryptic message from both these two on their social feeds. And I was like, what happened? Tell me what happened. I knew something had happened. And I'm like, your crypticism does not work here. I know the language that you're speaking. And I was very lucky because the little teaser trailer of both of their reaction where Tom Cruise is like, hey guys, and they both go, oh my God. I got to see that like a week or two out, and I literally watched it 40 times. I was at my son's party, and I'm just watching it. I'm just watching it over and over again. I'm like, you son of a bitch, they pulled it off. So, thank you so much for coming on the show. So proud of you guys. It's just,
I don't know if we would have done that teaser if it wasn't for you. You suggested it when I told you like we got Cruise. You were like,
I have to tease it.
What you got to do is you got to do a video teaser like 2 days before it comes out. People will go nuts.
They will, and they did.
They did, yeah.
They will, and they did. Oh, so good to see you guys. And yeah, so how, like, talk about the hangover of having Tom Cruise on your show. Did you truly had no clue that he was going to be on for that thing? I know that you guys have been trying to work towards him eventually coming on the show, but was there any thought, just even in the moment, when you had that, like, lineup of these crazy guests that are all just sitting there, obviously, you know, I'm a member of the Eddie Hamilton fan club, so let's just talk about Eddie, and you had Chris, and you've got like Glenn Powell and Tarzan jumping in on a Zoom call from a bus in the back of Italy, and you're like, oh man, this is incredible. Nick Offerman. But did you think, is there something? Is there hope? Is there something here?
I mean, I think we had hope going into it. I think when McCrory told me that there was no hope, then the hope was lost. And then it made the victory that much sweeter.
I think going into it too, in the weeks leading up to it, I had a little more hope than Drew did. I kept bringing it up to him. I was like, do you think maybe, do you think it could happen? Like, do you think they're going to do it? They'll bring in Cruz. And Drew kept shutting me down, being like, no, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I just thought there would be much more handle. I mean, I thought that if we got him, there would be handling involved, you know, that we would have to interface with his people.
Yeah. Approvals or something. Yeah.
Yes. Go over questions.
Right.
Clearly that didn't happen, as Charles quickly introduces a bit that someone texted me and said, the bit is so good that it failed because it is the Burj Khalifa failed bits. And I thought that is true.
Well, this is why people might wonder, why are you doing a Miami Nice Light the Fuse crossover? Because this is what happened.
Michael Mann.
Exceptional.
That's all. That's enough. As tenuous as a grip as that I need. And thank you, Charles, for that sound grab, because from now on, if I just need to have a shorthand, Michael Mann, exceptional.
Exceptional.
Yeah. Exceptional.
Was that I love Cruz's commitment to that bit was so great that he didn't just say exceptional. I think it was for Michael Mann. For one of the directors, he was like, wait, what'd you say? What'd you say? And then I repeated the name. I think it was Michael Mann. Yeah. And then he was like, exceptional. Like, I thought that was amazing the way he did that. It was so funny.
Oh, God.
Katie. I mean, it's interesting because, like, you kind of hear the hope die halfway through the episode when you're when Drew, you're like, McHugh, Tom's coming on, right? And he goes, oh, Tom's at Wimbledon. Yeah. And you're like, I can hear you be like, and you're laughing. You're like, oh, he's enjoying his day off or whatever. But I'm like, oh, that's when the hope died. And so it makes it even better when he actually comes on.
I feel like you can hear the hope dying when I'm like, well, he could Zoom from Wimbledon. I think I said something desperate like that. I'm gonna be honest too, I like start because McCrory was talking for a while after that about the titles and some other things, and I feel like I started to zone out a little bit because I was like kind of bummed. I was like, oh man, I don't think it's over, we're gonna have Cruz. And then suddenly he started to twist what he was talking about into Cruz and saying, you know, then your wishes all come true or whatever, and Cruz shows up on your podcast, and I was like, wait, what? That was absolutely insane.
It was the best reaction possible because like your actual excitement gets to show. And behind inside baseball, when I interviewed Michael Mann, they put me on a hold that was 10 minutes of silence.
Wow.
That would just add so much nervousness.
It would have looked like a video of James McAvoy in Split, like in a room by himself, like surveillance footage of me in my office, just like in a panic and then like going really interior, like just going crazy because I'm like, I can't hang up. I can't do anything. I just have to sit here and wait for this thing to happen. And then it obviously happens. But I think the surprise is so magic. And the fact that you could capture it was just great. And the fact that it was shared, like, I think your joy, like, oh my God, like, I don't feel that. That's like a great catch guy. Like, just everyone who saw that trailer was just like, they all felt exactly like you. I mean, in like one, you know, molecule of what you guys are feeling because of all the hard work you've done and all of the kind of the cred that you've built up with both the fans of the franchise and the people involved with the franchise. But when you said that, it was just like, this is something why I wanted to talk to you guys and get you on the show and just shoot the shit, because it's just such a fun victory lap. You deserve to have a victory lap, and it should be fun because you did it. It's really cool. Like, now, like, obviously now you're like, now what the hell do I do? But no, this is where the fun begins. What happened? The monkey's off the back. It's he's on the show. Everyone else can be quiet. That's it. Like, that's all that needs to happen. You guys can keep having fun with the show.
Well, we have just set up other mountains for us to climb. So, you know, we need to get the set. We need to, do some other things. But
yeah, we've got a lot of people still to talk to.
You got
to
get that David Fincher script. You got to find that script.
Yes.
That's one
of my... I want to talk to David Fincher. I want to talk to Joe Carnahan, to Frank Darabont, all the people who like almost had missions that fell apart or whatever.
Yeah.
We need to get our crew on that.
Oh,
like,
yeah. We have some...
We have some operatives who are extremely skilled in our Discord.
Sophisticated counter intel. Honestly,
they bring us sophisticated counter intel drops every day. Codenames, to the point where I'm like, what the fuck? Where did you get this? Like,
CK found out who Michael Mann's cinematographer was on Ferrari already. and validated it and has photographic evidence. I have no idea how he did that. I have absolutely no
idea. Who is it?
It's exclusive in our Discord. Hold on, where is
it? It's Eric Messerschmidt, the guy who for Mank.
Yeah, and Mindhunter, right?
Yeah, he did Mindhunter. He did the new Fincher, and he won the Oscar for Mank.
Wow!
And he's like, is there a news outlet I can share this with? I'm like, I know a podcast will take that information.
Wait, did I just break the news?
Break the story.
Always breaking news. And you know who I learned that from? Mr. Drew Taylor, I need to gas you up a little bit. Best interviewer in the game.
I think that is untrue, but
no,
I appreciate it.
It's so true. I mean, you and I go back more than a decade. We grew up together working for the Playlist. So I know that you have been honed to dig up the nuggets of breaking news. And I know you do all the junkets and stuff for the Wrap, but I just love your interview style. You have like a puckish quality.
I am relentless. Like, I mean, he was just grilling McCory. He was like, "Hey, McCory, so come on, who else is in this movie?" He would not give up at all.
I know, but you're relentless. But you have
give me anything.
You have a playful, mischievous tone, and I think that's why he enjoys your dynamic. And it was really, really fun listening to it. And it was also really fun listening to you ask Tom fucking Cruise to rank his hairstyles.
So. Just absolutely mystified. Yeah.
I think he went with it.
Yeah.
There's something that you do, Drew. This is like what's great about yourself. What I love listening to you guys is when you are positioning a question, you're asking the question, and sometimes I know that everyone does this. They listen to an interview and you're like, ask the question that I want you to ask. And what's good about good interviewers is that they sometimes they get to the question that you want to hear and you're like, yes. And then you hear an evasive answer. So many people are media trained these days, actors, directors, sometimes, you know, they're kind of aware of their brand. Should I say the thing that I don't want to say? Da, 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 da. And I just love how you almost hold them to account for your audience's dissatisfaction. It's like, if they answer the question, you're like, oh, so that's the answer you're going to give me? Is that? And I'm just like, I can't believe the balls on this guy. I mean,
McCory is perfect for Mission Impossible because he is so elusive and he speaks in riddles and even emails. It doesn't matter what format he's speaking in. He is very elusive. So, you know, I was trying.
But that's like the dynamic of you just sort of like dogging after him and him evading your attacks is really fun to listen to.
I will say Charles can attest that relationship has been developed by us over time. A lot of off the record conversations where we're just desperately trying to get information. It never works, but you know, it's always good to try.
Of course. So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and you can tell you have a rapport. It's not like the first time you're talking to him, obviously. So it's built up over years, and he clearly enjoys it.
Not overawed. That's the cool thing. Neither of you, especially with McHugh, you're not overawed with him. Like, it feels like you're more playful. Like, you can bust balls because you've got a relationship. Like, if that was a first time talking to someone, he'd be like, whoa. But he just, like, laughs at you and goes, oh, that's interesting. Like, that's oh, that's interesting.
Well, I feel like in some ways we bring that energy to every interview, even if we don't, even if we just met the person. I feel like there's a mischievous quality to all of our interviews. And there's like the dynamic between us. Like, Drew is just kind of a madman, and I'm sort of the straight man trying to just keep it together, just laughing the whole time. And that's sort of what it is. And right, it's interesting because I feel like, I don't know, we've become characters on this show. It's like different than, almost a little different than who we are in real life, but it's just a fun thing that we do.
Well, it's also nice because there is so little pressure on these interviews. Like, I am not trying to get news. I'm not trying to like kind of sell whatever movie it is. It's like usually older people who have done these movies maybe a little while ago. And it's just fun to try to get that information out of them or stir up some fun memories, as you both know. And, you know, so it's less pressure. It's more fun, just pure fun.
Yeah. And you have time. You don't, it's not like you have someone breathing down your neck for like a 12-minute interview or something.
Right. Yeah, we're not getting any slacks that say, you know, please rap or anything while we're trying to get a good question. So
And then you get Tom speaking eloquently for 45 minutes about filmmaking. That's like the most astonishing conversation I've ever heard, honestly. Because he's one of our greatest filmmakers, even though he's never directed anything. He is a great filmmaker.
Katie, Katie, this is my favorite thing. I've adopted it. It's Katie Walsh TM. Katie, what do you call Tom Cruise's resume?
Legends only.
Legends only.
It's true.
Cool.
I mean,
that's it.
Charles, I'm so glad you did the bit because I literally have a note on my computer that's like the directors that Tom Cruise has worked with. It's insane.
It's insane that list.
On multiple occasions. I actually reckon it's on Miami Nice when we've spoken to a phenomenal filmmaker and who has a great story, Justin Lieberman, who was an assistant of Michael Mann, and he worked on two Mann films back to back when he went there. He was in a couple of pre-pros for things that didn't go, but he did Collateral and then he did Miami Vice back to back. And like Justin was talking about the whole process and all those sorts of things. And we digressed big time onto Collateral, but we were just talking about, and then I think that's when Katie coined the phrase. She's like, Legends only. Like, look at his freaking resume. It's just like, dang. You literally ask about any filmmaker and the fact that they're all, you know, he's got this little crew right now that are working on a few of his films and working and this collaboration with McHugh. It's like, it's a huge tip of the hat to him as far as his agility and as far as how he can, you know, stay on the train, or if you like, but yeah, it's insane.
Well, the other thing that paid off about Charles's bit is that we got stories about Legend and Color of Money, which you never hear him talk about.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. I was like, I have to rewatch Color of Money like instantly, and I have to rewatch Legend instantly. Just listening to him talk about Ridley and Marty was like insane.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah. The Ridley stuff was just like, the way that I love paints on the lens, it's different to what's on the set, and it's different to what's like in the frame. It's like when it like and how it all feels on set, and then you go back and you look at the shot and you're like, oh my god, that was so cool. And so I love hearing it's a decade
It was amazing also hearing him talk about like hanging out with Sidney Pollack in the edit for Tootsie.
Yes, his like love of Tootsie that kept continuing throughout the podcast was so good. I was like, damn, yeah, I got to rewatch Tootsie too. I've been talking 2 years ago, but I like, got to go back. That was incredible. He just knows so much about filmmaking.
Yeah, that's so funny that, you know, that became like a joke for a while that it was like, has Tom Cruise ever seen a movie? And it was like, come on, people, just no. Obviously, he has seen everything, but it was like, I guess it's hard for people to get him to commit to talking about certain movies. And so it was amazing to be able to get him to do that.
By all accounts, this was better than the Cannes retrospective. I think that interviewer kind of lobbed softball questions and he didn't really get to talk about his oeuvre as much. So I feel like that maybe we helped supplement that the Cannes experience for people. If you look up Kyle's very snarky live tweet of that event.
I will have to go. I missed that live tweet. I'll have to go.
Yes, check it out.
It made me think a lot about how he is sort of like, he is one of the last great movie stars, and he is such a unique person because he knows so much about filmmaking. He is like this connection to the past in another era in a way. And he's worked with all these people who are no longer with us. But I'm just like, who's going to be Tom Cruise when we don't have Tom Cruise? He's not allowed to die. Like he's really just like, he is carrying the mantle for like the kind of filmmaking that we love and appreciate so much, and that seems to be, you know, like a dying breed. So I just, he's so important to me just for that alone. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's Glenn Powell.
Maybe it is Glenn Powell.
It'll be a protege of Cruise. It's not gonna be. I mean, this is a celebratory show. We don't want to.
Oh God! Don't go dark. Don't go dark.
What I'll say is, like,
even though I just went dark,
all I'm gonna say is the bar is so. I feel like sometimes the kind of exceptional, using his word, filmmaking that Tom Cruise does, especially in action blockbuster filmmaking, is like the bar is so low for all these other streamer stuff. Like I saw Prey the other day, which I think is terrific. And if you haven't seen Prey, you should absolutely see it. It's great. And one of the things about Prey, it's like it's shot in a place and there are actors and they have makeup. And that's the bar. Like the bar is so ghastly and garbage and CGI mumbo jumbo bullshit pixels that just make no sense. And compared to just a trailer for Dead Reckoning Part 1, or like him skipping around the Arc de Triomphe on the cobblestone roads on a motorbike in Fallout or whatever you want, just pick a frame and you're like, that's movies, not this other garbage. And it's like, and I feel like it needs to be a Cruise protege that's like been on a crazy set and seeing how all this stuff has happened and going, oh, that's how you do it.
Right.
Yeah, maybe Kaczynski will do it with the F1 movie and that kind of aesthetic, carrying on what was learned from Maverick, which we all, I know everyone on this call loved to death. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing hearing Cruise talk about the, in terms of action filmmaking, that comparing it to musicals and being able to bring that kind of character development into action scenes and into to little character moments of gestures and the visual filmmaking. That's like a, you know, harkens back to, like, you know, to Harold Lloyd and silent films that they love to talk about as well.
He has such a deep reference library that came through in that interview that I loved, you know, all of his references and talking about musicals and comedy and everything, and how it all is part of his, you know, palette for making incredible action films was just so special. So special to hear that.
Yeah, Charles sent me a letterbox list that someone had made of every movie that Tom Cruise talks about on Life of Hughes. So we were like, oh, that's really cool. So you can see, everything that he referenced, which is nice.
That's so sweet.
It's so cute.
That's one thing I was going to say is, because we love Eddie Hamilton, the great editor extraordinaire, it was so heartwarming. I found myself like almost choking up when like Tom Cruise and McHugh are like gassing up Eddie Hamilton. And they're just like, you're so great. Imagine Tom Cruise being like, Eddie, you're so great. You're so talented. Like, imagine him saying that to you about anything that you do. Like, Charles, Drew, you're so great. You're so talented. Oh,
we will never hear those words from, we've never heard those words from anyone. So that would be just a huge breakthrough then. God. But
we're saying that.
That's true. That's true.
Sean is saying that. It's good stuff.
No, I mean, the three of them have formed kind of a hive mind, it seems, on these last few movies. And it's just really heartening because Eddie is as nice as he is talented. So it's just so wonderful to have them appreciate him so much. I don't know. It's really lovely.
So two things. One, when is the Eddie Hamilton fan club shirt dropping on your merch store? Like, when is that happening? Because
it was axed. It was axed by the man himself. He said, this is too much. I know.
He's such a humble guy, and I think he just wasn't comfortable with it.
And two, I can't remember which one of you said it in the interview, but when you're like, when you watch movies that are just cut by other people, after you watch like an Eddie Hamilton cut movie, you're like, editing's garbage.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just like, so good. Now, the film that we probably have a mutual crossover connection, which is Collateral. So first we have to ask, because this is Miami Nice. Guys, do you love Miami Vice? Like, surely. I know I've talked to Charles about it, but I want to get Drew on the record. You guys love Miami Vice, right?
Yeah, I've been on the... I haven't watched I know that you told me the specific mix and match of the Miami Vice cuts, but yeah, I'm a fan of both of them. I think I like the longer one more.
Scott, you like the director's
cut? Yeah, the director's cut.
You don't like I mean, you lose Namoncourt, Drew. That's the only thing.
I know. I'm torn with his, and I was watching Collateral last night in preparation for this. I don't think all of his music choices are the best in that one.
I roast the music choices.
We do.
But I've roasted them so much that now I've come back around to loving them.
It's kind of part of the charm. That's how I feel the same way. I used to be like, oh, come on, what are these music choices? But now it's like, it's just part of the Michael Mann world that he creates. Like, this, it's like what these characters are listening to or something, you know?
The amount of Audio Slave I've endured, you know, but now at this point I couldn't imagine Collateral without Audio Slave.
Yeah.
I need to hear Chris Cornell wailing over the shot of the coyote. Like, it doesn't work otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched
it's especially weird in Collateral when he's like, oh, you like the classics? And it's a song from like that year or something. You can tell that there was just some. There was some disconnect there.
I've always thought that classics line is to just show how out of touch he is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
because that's a much more generous reading, I think.
Yeah,
but
But no, that's how I've always read that one. But no, the Audio Slave is right, and the Audio Slave is sometimes a little on the nose. But I was going to say, Katie, there's a great Miami Nice chatter that we've had before about like the audio drops in the sex scenes, like in the sex scenes on Miami Vice. We've talked about a few times on the show, like in direct and indirect ways. And there's an Audio Slave one that happens during what is an absolute fire sex scene. But if you like, if you get taken out of it because of the Audio Slave, you're like, come on, man. Let's just get on with this. The sex scene is why we're here.
Right.
You guys are both fans of Miami Vice, of course. So that's great. Charles, I wanted Charles to watch a Black Hat cut, our opening of our Black Hat Hacker cut the other day. We'll do that another time. But you're a fan of Vice too?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I saw the director's cut first, actually. I think on Drew's recommendation years ago, and I thought it was okay. And then I actually, when I went back, it must not have been Drew, but someone else told me that they thought they preferred the theatrical cut. So then I went and watched that the second time, and I really liked that a lot. In that same, what Katie was talking about, same kind of like the, some of the music choices and things are a little bit, but it's just like, it's part of the charm of Michael Mann now to me at this point.
It's also such a 2006 movie, and like you can't have a 2006 movie without Linkin Park playing in the club.
It was in the contract.
Yeah. So, yeah, and there are certain like fashion choices and other things, like the technology is so 2006. It's like charmingly, you know, dated in that way. But do you think Collateral, was that the last time Cruz was a villain?
Was that before or after Tropic Thunder?
It is before Tropic Thunder. Yeah. So Tropic Thunder.
Also yeah. Before Lions for Lambs.
I didn't see that. Is he a villain in that?
He's kind of a shitbag politician in that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But a true villain. I mean, he's a true psychopath in Collateral.
It's that and Interview with the Vampire, really, for his big villain roles.
Yeah, we don't really get to see him do that very often. I enjoyed hearing him talk about what it means to be the lead of a movie and what it means to be the supporting character, and how he's allowed in the supporting character roles and the Les Grossman performance and the Frank T.J. Mackey to like be big and weird. And like, he probably doesn't get to do that very often. And that's fun for him to put on makeup and a weird outfit and
fat
do something.
I want fat hands.
Yeah.
Right. Or, and like, you think about like Tom Hanks and Elvis, like, that's got to be fun for him to be completely out of pocket, crazy, wacky Dutch Southern Colonel. Like, I don't begrudge them that at all.
Yeah. It was so interesting, the wording that they used for it. That, you know, he said the responsibility of being the protagonist. It was,
Really interesting. So you can see how Les Grossman would be like, Tom Cruise is like, yeah, I want to do that. That's totally different from Ethan Hunt and Maverick and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I miss him. I miss him. I love him so much in Collateral that I miss him doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, he's phenomenal in that movie. It's
crazy.
It's so good. He just owns it. Yeah.
He's having so much fun.
Yeah.
This is where our show can really, you know, connect on like a campfire. Can you imagine if there were audio recordings of Tom Cruise talking to Michael Mann on that set? Just like them talking.
Yeah.
I want to know everything. I want to know how they developed the Terminator look with the silver hair and the silver suit. I want to know everything.
There's like little moments that stuck out to me that were so him, that were like, there's a part where he throws, he's in Jada Pinkett Smith's office, and he throws a chair through a glass window. And then immediately after throwing it through the window, jumps through the window himself, which has now been destroyed, but then falls over the chair. It's such a like specific, insane thing that I was like, it seems like, oh, was that on accident? They didn't. It's like, no, I'm sure that he like planned that and had it all perfectly executed exactly the way he wanted to do it. But it's just a very physical moment that's fascinating. And another moment was when he, at the end, the reveal of him on the back of the train, where he just like kind of gets up right at just the right moment. He stands up on the back of the train. Oh my God. It's so great. It's just so him.
By the end of the movie, he's not no longer human. He's like a Terminator or a shark or something, where you like, he's just moving and going, and you can't, like all of the humanity has been drained out of that character.
Yeah.
Not that he had much to begin with, but.
Right. But that moment though, like when he stumbles over the chair, like brought a right. little bit of humanity back to
yeah.
him. It's like, oh wow. Like he's not quite the Terminator, but he is like almost like he reminds me of like some of his movements were like kind of like the T-1000 and T2.
Totally.
And he and Robert Patrick are in the Hall of Fame of movie runners.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like Robert Patrick.
Him dashing down the little overpass or whatever is so, yeah. so great.
Oh my God. You guys
what about
know
a
this...
prequel set in San Francisco with the last time he killed the cabbie?
Anytime.
Have you thought about that?
Anytime.
Right?
I would take that.
It's just any day of the week. It's like, and again, to quickly digress back to Prey, it was like someone was like, wouldn't it be good to see the Predator go here? Let's just like pick a country, pick a time. It's like, yes, it would be. Let's do one of those every 2 years. I'll go back and I'll watch it again. It's easy as long as there's not any CGI rubbish that takes away from the location itself. But yeah, no, totally. I would love, like, I mean, look, they're going back to do a Bullet prequel. How can't we do a Collateral prequel, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gets away. God, that would be a fun.
Who would play him?
Still Glenn. Cruise.
Cruise. He's aging in reverse. He'll be fine. He can
That's
do
true.
It.
I know.
Yeah, he can do it.
If he can
yeah.
have the wavy hair, Mission 8, beautiful.
Yeah.
Actually, no. We can keep Mission for that hair. But yeah.
Do you guys know the story about the training with the Post-it that Michael Mann did with Cruise?
I don't think so.
Months getting into the zone to a point where you can just be the character. Michael creates that environment, and then as an actor, you just have to be able to keep creating it, creating it, creating it, creating that character.
I'm a big believer in whatever the central activity that a character is supposed to do in his life, that an actor should be able to do it. To really understand it and understand the character. So I designed a program, and I used somebody that I also used in Heat, Mick Gould.
It's important that we look every time.
He's ex-SAS, British Special Air Service, and kind of an expert in close-quarter combat with the kind of training he would have had if he had spent, you know, 8 to 12 years in Special Forces.
Blanks. Because actors use blank guns, then they pretend to feel like what happens when it actually goes off, and it's a whole different deal. I mean, once you cock that weapon and there's a live round inside there, and you suddenly put it down your trousers and you go, wow.
I mean, you hit somebody right in here. They're down and out. You hit somebody right down in here. They're in deep shit.
Run left to right, run back, left to right.
Yeah, but that guy seemed pretty down to me. You know?
And that guy was still twisting.
That guy was still twisting around. I saw him reaching for his gun. Hey. Give me one of those cross-eyed looks. I said, you know.
Yeah, we were using live ammo. It was great. The training on this, building this character from the ground up, really added a dimension. This is what he does. He just does it. It's an extension of who he is.
And for the actor then, when he's on a set and he's firing blanks, he does not firing blanks in his mind. He's firing live ammunition. This is really happening.
Yo, homie. Is that my briefcase?
There's a scene in which two people assault Vincent, not realizing who they're assaulting. And Vincent draws and shoots both of these guys. And it's in 1.3 seconds.
Somebody want to back off, yeah? We got it.
He had to be from Mr. Nice Guy to the extreme of aggression at the snap of a finger. That's difficult. So it did actually take 3 months to get that flip over.
The real value of it is what it does to the actor believing in himself.
Cry's not here now.
And it projects in a much deeper way into character. He can become very quiet. And we will look at the screen and we will feel that man is totally in command.
He's a quick draw. I'm here to tell you right now, Tom Cruise is a quick draw. If he'd have been in Old West, he'd have had some notches on his belt. The man is fast.
As an assassin, you must be economical in your moves. The fight scenes were choreographed even months ahead of time, and we just keep working them.
Let's make a note that I like it without the punch is better. I like it better with the open hand.
Yeah.
And so everything that Tom does in the picture, that's not stunt work. Tom did it all for real. Of course, there are no cuts in it. We've been doing it for the last 3 months every morning.
We worked with him every day for weeks, and he was always there. He would work out for an hour prior, stretch and warm up. And he was so diligent about, if I'm not doing something right, tell me. If his leg was a quarter of an inch off a mark while we're working out a fight sequence, he wants to know, is everything perfect? It almost is like a dance. Every move has to be balanced. As you go through the scene, he's not focused on these bodyguards and the people he's got to take out. He's got a vision. He's got a vision 200 feet away, and he's got to look like it's all automatic response, and he's always in charge of the situation.
I'm going to butcher it. So they had Michael Mann's military guy. He has like these British military advisors, but he was like training crews to, you know, do a hit on someone and like be unnoticed and to like go into a crowded space. So Cruise in fucking 2005 or whatever, you know, is he wearing a FedEx outfit?
Dresses
like?
In a courier outfit. Yeah. Like I don't know if it's UPS or FedEx like, or something like that.
So he
like
dresses in
brown uniforms, like with a brown
hat he's,
and all that.
He's in, you know, like a UPS outfit. He goes to Grand Central Market in downtown LA. You guys know Grand Central Market.
Yeah.
It's like a big, huge food court. It's very crowded. And he, what he has to do is like sneak up on someone and put like a Post-it on their back. And yeah, and then he's gotten the hit on them. So so Tom Cruise, biggest movie star in the world, goes into Grand Central Market and is like super stealthy and like, you know, puts the Post-it on someone's back and then gets out and leaves. And it's like his training for being like a stealthy hitman. But it's like, how on earth did no one notice
him? I hope he signed him at least. I hope it said like gotcha with an exclamation point. Yes. And Tom Cruise.
No.
I want one of those guys.
You know what he, you know what the post that said.
Exceptional.
That's what
it was. True. Yeah.
Oh exceptional. My God.
TC. That's what he signed, I'm sure.
TC. But no, that like that's what I mean about those obsessive guys, because they, you know, the big, and I also really love that, I don't thank God for the internet, but like people going, Collateral. Yeah, it's Vincent Collateral. That's his name.
Vincent Collateral.
Oh, my God.
Even our great friend Bill Gambiri says Vincent Collateral all the time. And I'm like, why are you doing this, Bill? You're stirring the pot. But yeah, so no, those two guys together working, you know, Michael Mann talked about even getting a, you know, the gray suit, it's slightly badly tailored because he wanted to show that he'd come from somewhere like Thailand or something like that, or somewhere in Southeast Asia where they'd kind of knocked off a famous, you know, suit. But it's not like an Italian suit doesn't.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fit to perfection. It's good but not great. But he also wanted him to have that kind of Neil McCauley thing of like gray suit, white shirt, short hair, not very memorable. Everything says not memorable. So they create this guy, gray hair, kind of very bleeds into your normal 9-to-5 commute kind of person. And they had so much backstory around him. They had all this like tradecraft, and obviously Cruise is a guy who's like used weapons and driven cars and done stunts. So he gets all of that just effortlessly. But yeah, man, that Collateral is something that we've continued to talk about because they share so many like commonalities as far as like crew and things like that and people that and right there in man's big digital shift. So we've talked about it a lot, but Cruise is just epic. And I think if you say your favorite moments or people say their favorite moments in Collateral, it's always something different because for me, it's not just like one moment. It's like, if you just see him in the cab talking to Jamie Foxx as Max, it's just him in the cab is like the Tom Cruise as a not leading character. It's the side character. It's all this flash. It's all this I Ching and flipping out money and like, you know, like it's so great. It's
well, you know, we're obsessed with his close up magic skills. So I feel like the money is sort of an extension of that, which we saw in the first Mission Impossible and we will see again in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning next summer. Yeah.
Does he actually have close up magic skills?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
He makes the disc disappear.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knew it before the first Mission Impossible or if he learned it for that.
Okay.
But I think he is a fan of magic or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure he's a fan of magic. But you know him. He probably spent like 10 months training to do all that one scene for Mission Impossible. And I'm sure he retained all that info. And as you can see, it's in the trailer for the new one.
Yeah, we're fans of Ethan's sort of supplemental skills that don't really work that well in Spycraft, but are just kind of fun embellishments. He's got a photographic memory. He draws really well.
Oh, we love the drawing
skills. Close-up magic.
He does draw really well.
He also has an uncanny ability to die and come back to life. He's done that a couple times.
Yes.
He's dead for like 6 minutes in MI3, I think. It's some crazy number.
Oh my god, he's like a zombie.
I love how you went from he can do card tricks and then he comes back to life. Like, yeah.
These are his skills.
He's got close-up magic skills and he is Jesus. So those are two things that he
JC can do. And TC. They can both come back from the dead.
He can hold his breath underwater for 6 minutes or whatever. Yeah.
What the hell? Well, I'm weirdly obsessed with close-up magic too. And magic is just storytelling. And it's cinema. It's just visual storytelling. Listen, you go to the Magic Castle, you become obsessed with close-up magic.
Well,
I've never been.
He tells a story in our next week's interview with Maggie Q. She tells a story about him like making a sandwich appear out of nowhere. And that, like, she says, like, Brett Ratner had another incident with him where it was another, I forget what the item was, but also just made this item appear right in front of them. And they thought it was so funny. And Drew and I are speculating about it. And we're like, I think he was doing close up magic just to fuck with them. Yeah. So anyway, I'm butchering the story, but if you hear next week's,
I think it's more of a power move, but whatever it is, it's
just like, go like talk to them and be like, oh my God. He's like, oh, BLTs are so great. Don't you love BLTs? And they'll be like, what? Yeah, sure. I like BLTs. And then suddenly he just has a BLT in his hand. And they're like, wait, how did that get there? So I think he's just fucking with them and doing close up magic. That's my theory.
Maybe his assistant is Chris Angel. You know, like he thinks about a BLT and then a BLT appears, you know, like it's just right there in his hand.
Sorry, I can't stop thinking about Brett Ratner being befuddled by Tom Cruise doing close-up magic.
I'm sure he's befuddled by a lot of things, but yeah.
I keep trying to picture this scenario and I'm like having a hard time.
Yeah, I mean, there's an alternate universe where Brett Ratner directed Mission Impossible 3.
Wait, was he supposed to?
He was offered it. Cruise was talking to him about it.
All right, well.
I think when Joe Carnahan fell apart, they talked to a few different names. I can't remember who else they talked to before JJ, but we talked about it in our Making of MI3 episodes.
Oh my God.
We dug up the info then.
These guys are going into people's personal storage containers for copies of scripts and getting them fixed by technicians so that they can read them. And then Charles is reformatting an Oliver Stone Mission Impossible 2 script from scratch.
Yeah, let me tell you, reformatting Robert Towne's draft of the first mission was the most tedious bullshit I've ever had to deal with, and I can't believe I did it for this dumb show.
The only thing more tedious is reading it. Do we have a rim shot on the soundboard?
I know. No? Okay.
All I've got is this.
Exceptional.
That's all I've got. I had a couple of things to ask, which is there was a character that popped up in your new episode. Is he the co-writer? This is like the co-writer of Dead Reckoning and Dead Reckoning Part 2. What was his name?
Eric Jenderson,
right. Because he was like, he was there, but he was only sort of chatting intermittently because you had like Murderers Row, you know, Mark Gatiss and Nick Offerman, and then Tarzan and the boys, the bus boys just jumping in and all those sorts of things, and then Eddie and McHugh and all those sorts of things. But I love how there's a moment, I think it happened with both of you, where you kind of like realize that, oh, this guy might like let something slip, and you got turned.
Yeah.
You both kind of like virtually turned on him. Like, oh, wait, this guy's going to say some shit. And then he's not as evasive as Macquarie. And you went at him, and then Macquarie's like, yeah, interesting what Eric just said now. Yeah. Oh, that's the definition he just gave you. And you can almost tell like Macquarie's texting him on the Zoom chat. Shut the fuck up.
They were actually the only people who they were in the same room together, those two.
Ah, right.
Oh, they were the only ones. He's kicking him under the table.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But yeah, I think Eric, I don't know. I mean, Macquarie has not had a co-writer on Rogue Nation or Fallout. So I don't, but it seems like maybe he'll have a co-writer for these two.
It's a lot of work.
I think there are other writers that he bats around ideas with. I think one of them actually has a credit on The Mummy, but I think Eric will have a credit on both of these movies, and apparently on the movie that they're working on after 8, the undisclosed, gnarly Tom Cruise movie that we could not get anything out of him about. Other than the word gnarly.
Well, I can't wait for that. Gnarly Tom Cruise. Yeah. I mean,
Now that Russia has vacated the International Space Station, is Tom Cruise going to space? That's what I want to know. I have to know.
The timing just seems very weird. We've been trying to figure it out. We've seen that there were launches that were being earmarked for his possible involvement that have come and gone. So yeah, we can't figure it out. I'm sorry.
Now we're badgering you. You're the I'm the Drew.
Yeah. What the answer you're gonna give us?
We wish we knew more.
I'm worried that movie's not gonna happen. I don't know when it will happen. I mean, they're gonna be shooting Mission until I think the end of next year, I think.
Wow.
Shooting 8 until next year? Wow.
Yeah.
I thought that were further along.
Simon Pegg said something about it on an interview recently. He said, I'll be shooting Mission until October of next year, I think is what he said.
Wow.
Listen, if they have 2 years to finish this movie, they're going to use 2 years to finish
the
movie.
Oh, yeah. You take
you can. They were shooting stuff for 7 last weekend. So just think about that, you know.
Well, what did Eddie Hamilton say? This is the thing that blew me away, and this is why I love your show and why I recommend it to everyone who's listening to this episode now, but everyone I talk to about your show, is you guys were chatting to Eddie Hamilton about editing stuff for Top Gun, and he talked about he was working tirelessly on some of the, you know, one of the trench run footages or something like that after one of the trench run days or one of the days that they're practicing dogfighting in the air. And he said, I worked for like 9 hours and I'd edited like 7 seconds of footage, and I was just like... I was like, that's the toil. That's the perfection. That's like, you know, that's next level. That's next level obsession. And also then it also scales just how much footage that he had to scour through to get the absolute perfect shots. And it's like, well, that's why when you watch Top Gun Maverick and it's been sitting on a shelf for 2 years, it comes out and just blows anything out of the water. It's because they just take, if they've got the time and they can apply that level of care to it, it's going to be special.
No, I was going to say that you said Tom is such a great filmmaker. I think Eddie is just as great of a filmmaker as well. They're just so, they're so tuned into what the audience needs, what the movie needs. And it's amazing. Well, it's amazing for us to be able to be there and sort of get it in real time. What is going on with these movies? It's pretty crazy.
Well, I think as Glenn Powell said in the interview, he said this brain trust, like, I think it's the team of Cruise, Macquarie and Eddie. And obviously this is a slightly different team on Maverick because Joseph Kaczynski's part of it. And there's a different team for Dead Reckoning. So we got Eric Jenderson part of it, but yeah, there's like an amazing brain trust there of, they just know, they're so in tune with what an audience wants.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I sort of lament, like, you know, Cruise is no longer working with, like, you know, he had his era of working with, like, Kubrick and Paul Thomas Anderson and Michael Mann and, like, doing working with all these great auteurs. And I'm like, oh, I want him to, you know, do something else. But I also don't want him to do something else. No. They've got such a great team. They've got, you know, they've got this brain trust going on. I love all the stuff they're doing together. So it's like, I'm good. I'm good with this. Just the fact that, you know, you were talking about how they take so much time and care, and but that McCrory was like, there's certain things I don't want to confirm in case we, like, just don't use that location. Like, they will go and shoot a whole thing, and then it's like, oh, maybe we won't actually be in Iceland or wherever the fuck they're going to be. Like, they're just like, it doesn't work. And that's how dedicated they are. You could tell listening to all of them that, like, storytelling and purpose and all of that is of the utmost importance to them. Like, does this make sense for us to be in this location? Does this make sense for us to in this story? And, like, I just feel like that we're that is rare these days for having to, you know, to have people to be that thoughtful about storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, there's just the amount of effort you feel that they put into every frame is so impressive. And I had that same thing. I think even in early on in the podcast, you probably hear Drew and I talk about how, you know, that same thing that people say, that, like, oh, you wish Cruise would go back to working with other directors and those big name directors he used to work. But it's like, he worked with all of them.
Yeah.
Now he's on this role and they're doing this incredible work. They're like, you see the results of the evolution from Rogue Nation to Fallout to Top Gun Maverick and how in tune they are with what audiences want, and bringing this kind of this level of emotion into these big action movies. And it's like, nobody says to DiCaprio or you know, back in the day to De Niro, like, oh, I wish you wouldn't work with Scorsese so much or whatever, you know.
Right,
like, I mean, it's just, let them do their thing. They're just clearly they're onto something. Like, let them do it.
I love that team, and I'm like happy with all the output and just like the state of the industry these days. I'm like, thank God we have a Top Gun Maverick. Thank God we have these Mission Impossible movies coming out. Otherwise, it's just going to be the Gray Man. What else are we going to do? Sorry to that man.
You took us.
I took us to the dark place again.
No. Get out of the dark place.
Okay. Get out.
Well, look, I'm not going to keep you too much longer, gentlemen, and we're not going to keep you too much longer on the show. We just want to say, look, as fellow podcasters who occasionally secure people, look out at, you know, when I'm not sure what's going to hit better is our Dominic Lombardozzi episode or your Tom Cruise episode. We'll have to see that in the analytics. But what I would just say is, you guys are legends. We're so proud of you as buddies, as fellow podcasters. Your show is amazing. And I feel like there's a great kinship between Miami Nice and Light the Fuse, and you guys are just doing amazing stuff, and we're so proud. And I'm so proud that you guys shared your little teaser with me before, and I'm literally the person, like, I would have racked up like 98% of the views before it was actually formally released, because I literally probably watched it as many times as you did.
Damn it!
So I'll go back and gas up those numbers and watch it. Okay. But I just want to say, like, it's awesome to talk to you guys. It's super fun. We're so proud of you. And it's just like it's just the coolest thing ever. You gave the people what they wanted in the best possible way. And your continuing enthusiasm to be both completely behind enemy lines and seeing everything and how the sausage is made and still loving the final product and being excited to talk about it is just really admirable and awesome. So thank you so much for talking to us on Miami Nice. You guys rule.
You guys rule.
Yeah.
You rule.
Thank you so much for having us. And yeah, it's I definitely feel that kinship with you. And it's been awesome to show up and do this for you with you and have you on our show as well. We'd love that.
Yeah,
we got Katie. We got to get Katie on our show now.
Get Katie on the show next. Legends only.
I'd love to do it.
Legends only.
I would just say also, Drew, thank you for whoever your buddy was. I'm not sure if we said his name earlier or her name earlier about the Burj Khalifa of bad bits.
Yes.
That is That phrase is so good. And
that was my good friend Kevin Sullivan. He's a researcher for Colbert. And so he knows a good bit from a bad bit. And he knows the Burj Khalifa from bad bits. So I think it was great. Everything about the bit ended up working because it was a disaster, which I appreciated, but it also gave us these amazing this amazing insight, these amazing stories that we would never have heard. I mean, we on our own, we probably would have never said, oh, tell us about Color Money, but through the bit he told us that, so it ended up working better than anything we could have imagined. So
yeah, it was an attempt at like trying to get exactly what we got, which is like, you know, just trying to get him to talk about different parts of his career. There's just so much to talk about. And so
yeah,
it was so interesting to have him, particularly he was struck by Ridley Scott and Legend and you know, what Ridley Scott did with the set, you know, shooting, how he shot the sets for Legend. I mean, it's so fascinating. And hearing him talk about the developing visual style of all the different pool sequences in Color of Money. I mean, it was just so awesome to hear those little tidbits. And hopefully we can get him again, and we'll keep prying him for more. And Drew will relentlessly hassle him for more stuff, I'm sure.
I cannot wait.
Continue.
I think he liked
holes.
It.
It's the funnest.
Well, I think he responds. I mean, if anyone is going to respond to unwavering enthusiasm, it's Tom Cruise.
Yes,
absolutely.
So I feel like we do have a kinship in that regard of just nonstop support for what he's doing and appreciation, and not in a kiss assy way. I don't think so.
I think the level of effort too. I mean, it's just like we've been doing one episode a week for 4 years on this, on Mission Impossible. It's pretty insane.
Yeah.
It is a truly impossible mission that you have done.
I'm going to give you the greatest compliment I've ever received. I received it from Michael Mann.
Oh,
okay. Let's hear it.
It was, I compliment your obsessions.
Thank you.
And I compliment your obsessions because when Michael Mann, the most obsessive human being on the planet, except for maybe Tom Cruise, says I compliment your obsessions, I was like, yeah, that I did it.
That means something.
Means something. So yeah, you guys are doing great work. If you guys aren't listening to Light the Fuse, do it immediately. There is a huge bevy of incredible filmmakers and talent that have come on to talk about everything to do with Mission and all the different missions, and you can choose your own adventure. And if you have a favorite mission, you can literally just go and find the interviews about that. So yeah, look, it's been awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Get Katie on there for the
Thank you.
Podcast.
Yes, we will.
I feel like I wanted to talk about Collateral a lot more. I watched it last night. And I was so excited to it. It's like we talked for like 2 seconds about it, and then just talked about Tom Cruise the whole time.
We can do this again. But again, the Burj Khalifa of Bad Bits gives us this on my soundboard forever.
Michael Mann.
Exceptional.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.